You're listening to Valley Edition, our election special. I'm Joe Moore, a special two-hour program today. Now to talk about the propositions facing voters on November 4th, we have two guests joining us on the phone, Thomas Holyoke, political science professor at Fresno State, and Bill McEwen of the Fresno Bee. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
I want to start out, though, with something that's not a proposition and something of interest to local voters in Fresno County, and that's a race for a Superior Court judge that is generating an awful lot of interest, but even more money and contributions that are flowing into this very heated battle between Lisa Gamoyan and Rachel Hill. Bill, have we seen anything like this race in the past in Fresno County? This is really kind of unusual.
Well, we've seen judicial races that have had a lot of sniping before. This isn't unusual. What's unusual here is the amount of money being spent. And last time I calculated it, it was at $560,000 between the two candidates, almost evenly spent or raised, both camps having an equal amount of money. That's very unusual, and I don't know where this is going to end up because both candidates are very determined, and I'm sure they're, you know, spending money as we speak.
There's all sorts of allegations flying about. I think it's interesting, though, because we have this race for Superior Court judge in the general election that is so heated and generating so much money in a race that usually isn't quite as high profile in other years and other judgeships. Also, in the primary, we saw a situation for Fresno County District Attorney where we had also a race that's usually pretty low profile, not a lot of money spent. And that race between Elizabeth Egan and Lisa Sondergaard-Smitkamp was equally hard fought. Professor Holyoke, your thoughts, is this a new normal for Fresno County campaigns in these races that previously were kind of low profile?
I think this is the new normal just about wherever you are. I mean, over the last 10 years, you've seen positions like this become increasingly competitive. Now, I think there's a difference between what we saw in the DA's race and the judge's race. The judge's race, that's not really on the political ladder to anywhere in particular. But the DA's race, those kinds of races can now be seen as, you know, stepping stones to other kinds of offices. So what you really have are people who are probably interested in having a political career go for those kinds of positions now. I mean, in other words, I would be surprised if Lisa Sondergaard-Smitkamp in about 10 years from now didn't, you know, consider running for, you know, a different kind of office. But the judge's race, that's a little bit more of a surprise. But then again, you know, people are starting to pay more attention to the politics of the judiciary and realizing the extent of judicial power, although in this race the extent of judicial power has been blown way out of proportion for that particular judgeship. But people take it these races more seriously now than they used to.
Back to you, Bill.
Well, I think what's going on here is, I mean, overwhelmingly judges are appointed by the governor, and, you know, people that are interested in becoming judges, they have to weigh what their political affiliation is with what the governor's political affiliation is. In addition, they have to submit their name, and their resume is poured over, and they receive a rating. You know, are they qualified to be a judge or not? Are they going to be part of that judicial selection process? So, but when you have an open judgeship where the voters decide, then you get all kinds of candidates running for all kinds of reasons. And I agree with the professor. I mean, the people are running to be a judge, and one of the reasons they're running is it's a really good job.
Yeah.
And, in Lisa Gamoyan's case, I mean, she's been in the trenches for a long, long time dealing with very difficult cases. And I think, you know, in her career when she was mapping it out, she probably saw it ending with her being on the bench. And so she has that expectation. And then you have Rachel Hill, a very bright person. You know, she's had several jobs, various roles, very varied career. She saw this opportunity, and she really wants it. And we got to remember there were three other people that wanted it too. And the level of sniping, I think it reflects the fact that they both raised so much money, you're going to spend it. And, yeah, you're going to have ads saying how great you are, but at some point you're going to say have to say how bad the other person is. I mean, it's almost inevitable, and that's what we're seeing happening here. And what's interesting to me is how you have all these judges backing Rachel Hill, and then you have law enforcement backing Lisa Gamoyan. And in the DA's race, if you go back, District Attorney Egan banked a lot on having the endorsement of Sheriff Mims. There had been polling that was done that was very favorable to Sheriff Mims, and polling that, you know, where respondents said, hey, if Sheriff Mims backs somebody, I'm, you know, pretty likely to vote for them. And that didn't work out in that election because Lisa Smitkamp was able to make the case to the voters that Elizabeth Egan, you know, had done a so-so job and it was time for a change. And that's rare, you know, to see a standing and incumbent district attorney challenged in that way, especially successfully. So now we have Lisa Gamoyan, again, banking on the endorsement of law enforcement and in particular Sheriff Mims.
We'll see how it turns out November 4th. Moving on to the propositions, I want to start out with the one that's at the top of the ballot. That's Proposition 1, formerly Proposition 43. You may still see some references to that out there somewhere as the legislature and the governor changed the order and the name of those propositions to enhance their profile. This is the $7.12 billion water bond. It is being supported heavily by the governor. In fact, the governor is mainly campaigning for Propositions 1 and 2 and not for himself, at least in his ad buys. This is being billed by many in the Valley as the solution to the drought, the solution to the water problems facing Central California. Bill, is this maybe oversold to some degree?
Well, it's politics, so of course it's oversold. Will it help? Yes, it will help. But if you read it carefully, you know, there's no guarantee that any dams will be built. It says $2.7 billion for water storage. Could be, you know, underground storage. It could be dams. There's no guarantee that dams are going to be built. Dams still face the same hurdles that they've faced for the last 30 years, 40 years.
And many of the environmental groups that are supporting Proposition 1 do so, saying they're confident that the proposition has been written as so as to make any funding for surface storage next to impossible.
Yes. And, you know, the opposition to Proposition 1, it's an interesting mix because you have environmental groups that are against it, and then you have very conservative groups that are joining them. And, you know, their reasons for opposition could be the dams aren't guaranteed, or it could be the general fund's going to have to pay this off. It's an obligation that we shouldn't be taking on.
Moving on to the rainy day fund. Rainy days certainly are something that people in the Valley are looking forward to, but this is a different sort of rainy day. Moving on to Professor Holyoke, your thoughts on Proposition 2 and its potential for winning the approval of California voters?
Well, this is one that's been, you know, talked about in various forms for quite some time, and you know, the idea that California needs to have a better kind of financial reserve to basically make it through the dry seasons when it comes to revenue. Indeed, we even have something like that on the books right now. However, what the prospects for this are, they've been getting better, but I believe, according to the last PPIC poll, the Public Policy Institute of California, that at this point, I think a majority is still not in support of Proposition 2, although the percentage of voters that are supporting it does seem to be increasing. It doesn't have the same really high level of support that, say, Proposition 1, the water bond, has right now, but then again, it's not probably seen by voters as nearly as important as the water bond is. So this is one that's we're not quite sure how this is going to end up at this time. But Governor Brown has put, you know, nearly as much emphasis on Proposition 2 as he has back on Proposition 1, and certainly more so than he has on his own efforts to be a reelected governor.
Well, what I find interesting here is this is the kind of things that seemingly voters have asked for. You know, the voter says we need to budget smarter. We need to budget more like a family would budget. This takes the reserve from 5% to 10%. And yet the reaction's been, you know, a lot of apathy on it. So I see this as a test of Governor Brown. you know, can he bring it home? Because, again, a lot of people are undecided on this if you look at the latest polling, and it'll be up to Governor Brown to sell it in these final days.
Even more?
And this is being seen really as part – this and Proposition 1 are really being seen as the Brown legacy. And these are the things that he – and possibly the one on changing sentencing. I mean, this is what he really wants to leave for the state of California. On the water bond, he really wants to try to solve these paradoxical problems we have on water between water storage and environmental issues. On Proposition 2, he knows that, you know, the state goes through boom-bust cycles because of the way we bring in revenue in the state is highly dependent on taxes on upper-income earners. And that means that when things go down really badly, as they did in the last few years. And he's trying to build a very strong reserve to help us, you know, get through those times. These are the legacies Brown wants to leave for California. This is what he wants to be remembered for.
Moving on to Proposition 45, one of two propositions on the ballot dealing with health care. And this one is involving the state's insurance commissioner and giving that office more power to approve or reject rates from health insurers. And it's also generating a lot of media attention and a significant number of donations on the against side. According to MapLight, so far the No on Prop 45 side has raised $37.5 million. The Yes on Prop 45, just under $1 million. Bill, this is one of those hard-fought political battles over health care, and the insurance companies are putting quite a bit in.
Yes, and actually I think they'll end up spending more than $50 million in opposition to it. And, you know, the Fresno Bee, we say yes on 45. Newspapers throughout California pretty split on that one. And our position is there are 35, 36 other states that give their insurance commissioner this power. My goodness, we let the insurance commissioner say yay or nay on auto insurance premiums. Shouldn't we allow him to have that same power in regards to rate hikes on health premiums? And we say yes. And opposition says, oh, it's too early. We have to see how the Affordable Care Act works out. But the fact of the matter is these other states, they've been dealing with it. And in this atmosphere, I mean, the no on Proposition 45, I've never seen – well, I shouldn't say I've never seen, but it's one of the most disingenuous campaigns I've ever seen. I mean, they raise arguments that are completely false. They've run TV commercials in which they just make up things.
Specifically, what are you talking about?
Oh, the independent commission that is already setting these rates. There's no such thing as an independent commission. This is a complete fabrication. So I think my advice to voters is just look at what the insurance companies, the stake they have in this. And, you know, if they really were concerned about your health care, hey, they give up $50 million and put it into your health care.
Tom, what does that say about the potential for passage of Prop 45?
Oh, nothing particularly good. You know, these are the kinds of, you know, propositions that when they become really complex and people don't understand what's going on with them, the voters either tend to not vote at all or they tend to vote no, which is certainly would be my advice to voters. If you don't understand the proposition, vote against it.
Moving on to Prop 46, another one dealing with health care, and this is a very interesting one because it is an example of the phenomena that has been called sweeteners that are put into propositions that have maybe a broad overall theme but contain maybe one thing that people can really get behind, and then a few other things that are a little more abstract or policy wonkish that might be really at the heart of the measure. This deals with raising the cap on pain and suffering damages awarded in medical malpractice suits, also on drug testing for physicians. Bill, this is another one that is generating a huge outlays, $53 million in the No on Prop 46 campaign, $6 million on the Yes side. Where does the B come down on this one?
Well, if you look at it, there are basically only two major papers in California that say yes on 46, and that would be the Fresno Bee and the Modesto Bee. So you can figure out from that the Sacramento Bee disagrees on that. And they say too many moving parts. And also, just in theory, they're opposed to drug testing, you know, in general, without a reason to call for a drug test. In other words, you know, why drug test all doctors? Maybe you need to drug test doctors that have problems. Our position is that we drug test pilots. We drug test a lot of people in society, certainly doctors who have your life in their hands deserve to be drug tested. The other part of this is that the malpractice cap, it's $250,000. The other side is saying it's going to, you know, if you raise it to $1 million, all these doctors are going to leave California. They're going to be forced to retire. And the fact of the matter is malpractice insurance is one of the most profitable you know, the things that insurance companies do. And basically, they're paying out 38 cents on the dollar. And the other thing is the $250,000 cap, that was a long, long time ago. And if you look at, inflation and everything else, it's not reasonable. We think that the cap ought to be raised. I would note that the other side is saying quite often that Prop 46 would take all the limits off the malpractice caps. And again, that's a complete fabrication.
Tom, this is, again, as I said, and as Bill was alluding to there, an example of a ballot measure that has a number of different moving parts. And the drug testing one, I guess, is the one that's easiest for most California voters to latch onto. Is this something that we have seen a lot of, and are we going to be seeing more of propositions like this in the future?
Well, I think we've already seen lots of propositions like this, propositions that are, you know, that have a lot of different things going on that is really difficult for, you know, voters to really understand. And I think actually the part of this that's the Proposition 46 that's really most interesting is actually the bit about the lawsuit cap, because that's something that a lot of people can fairly easily focus on, even though they may not understand it nearly as well as they think they do, and is really just a regurgitation of a very long-standing battle between the medical community and the trial lawyers groups. And, you know, this is just another way of bringing out the battle that they've been fighting in Sacramento for decades now.
Moving on to some of the last two propositions here. Prop 47, kind of a lower profile than the last two, but this is one that is very important as it deals with criminal justice and criminal sentencing. Bill, what is the essential argument on both sides of this Prop 47?
Well, the argument is that it's sentencing reform, and if it's passed, it will give more people a chance to come back into the community and get on the straight and narrow, so to speak. People talk about the wholesale incarceration of individuals, especially people of color and people from poor communities, and I think there's a valid argument to make for that at the B. We're opposed to Prop 47, and just on the thinking that we're still going through Assembly Bill 109. Certainly the 58 counties to varying degrees have had trouble implementing that. And while we believe in sentencing reform, one, we think it should be follow an the naming of an independent commission, and we should be looking at everything, and we've long advocated for that. But we think it's too close on the heels of AB 109, and we realize that's probably not a popular stand to take once again. I think the polling shows that it's going to pass.
Tom, years ago, California voters were out in front on this perceived crackdown on crime, passing things like three strikes just a few years ago. More recently, California voters made some amendments to that. Now, Prop 47, another thing that would provide sentencing reform. Is the mood of the California electorate, has it changed significantly when it comes to criminal justice reform?
Well, it certainly seems so, because the pendulum is swinging, you know, very much back in favor of essentially the rights of prisoners and stuff, and the feeling that our prisons are way overcrowded now, that really that three strikes was probably severe overkill, and that we have an awful lot of people in prison who we'd probably be better served as a society. There was a better chance for these people to be rehabilitated outside of prison, and that they're in prisons and under sentences that are really not warranted given what they did. And this is really an opportunity for California to straighten out a lot of the messes it's created in its criminal justice system.
Yeah, we're up against the clock here. We have time for the last proposition, and that would be Proposition 48, and one that is certainly of interest to local voters, as this would allow the North Fork Rancheria of Mono Indians to build a new casino away from their traditional land in North Fork and build it on Highway 99 just north of Madera. It is going before voters statewide. The opponents of this measure say that it would set a dangerous precedent to allow off-reservation gaming and other communities. The supporters are mainly the tribe themselves. If you look at the opponents, though, big money flowing from two factions, and that would be the potential competition for this new casino. Bill, your thoughts and how this fits into this, I'm going to just say, crazy world of Indian gaming. What's going on right now in Central California with the Chukchansi mess and everything else?
Well, I think the situation at Chukchansi probably doesn't help, the yes on 48 people, certainly not in the Central Valley. I don't know how much the news has gotten out about the situation with Chukchansi statewide. But basically, if you build there, this is not what California voters approved when they, gave the thumbs up to what is called Class 3 gaming or Las Vegas-style gaming. If this proposition is defeated with a no vote, I mean, they're still going to build there now, but it's not going to be a Las Vegas-style casino. It'll be more of, the bingo gambling hall-type card room. And you can bet that they'll mount a legal fight also challenging the outcome on this. So, a lot remains to be seen about what's going to happen there in Madera County.
Tom, any final thoughts on Prop 48?
Prop 48 is if this goes through and allows
that's a good term. That's a good term.
We're probably almost certainly going to see other efforts to do just exactly the same sort of thing, and maybe that's not in a way such a bad thing. Maybe a little competition in Indian casino gaming isn't such a bad thing, especially given the terrible way we've treated Native Americans in the past. Maybe this is something they deserve.
Again, Tom Holyoke joining us from Fresno State, political science professor, one of our political analysts here on Valley Edition, and Bill McEwen of the Fresno Bee giving us their thoughts on the propositions facing voters. Election Day is November 4th. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.